The Guardian.
Hey, hey. Welcome to Music Weekly from Guardian.co.uk. I'm Paul McInnes, and your oral prescription this week includes a dose of Johnny Flynn, the acoustic 24-year-old who's living in the 50s. An inspection of your taste buds when considering new music from Black Mountain, Leaky Lee and the Wu-Tang Clan. A long rest in a darkened room after reading your blog comments. And finally, a suppository filled with everything Jason Pierce of Spiritualized has ever ingested. Baby, never should say never. That's Soul on Fire by Spiritualized, our guest this week. To explain a little more as to the significance of this act and their influence on popular music culture, I'm joined by Dr. Rosie Swash, PhD, MFI, KFC. Hello, Dr. Rosie. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
Good. Glad to hear it. Could you tell us a little bit more about... I'm going to drop that kind of faux medical voice. I feel much more relaxed talking normally. Could you tell us a little bit more about Spiritualized and why they matter, if indeed they do?
Well, when you talk about Spiritualized, you're really talking about Jason Pierce, aka Jason Spaceman, who used to be in the band Spaceman 3, who had a cult following in the 80s, and when they disbanded at 91, Spiritualized got together, made a series of excellent albums throughout the 90s.
Of what kind?
Well, it's actually their sound is it's which he talks about in the interview is very it's sort of very gospel. It's very classical in that sense. It's not really traditional indie, although that's probably how it would be pigeonholed. But we got to talking about his current album, their current album rather, Songs in A&E, which was made around the time of a well-publicised illness where he nearly died of pneumonia. I was very nervous about interviewing him because of the difficult reputation he's acquired. So
really, what is this difficult reputation?
He doesn't really like talking to interviewers.
Hey!
My favourite kind.
That's great.
But so my first question is a little bit left field because I tried to bamboozle him into giving me an answer. I came across a quote that I couldn't get out of my head as someone that was about to interview you from it's a Melody Maker interview from 1991. Wow. And it said, Jason Pierce is the man who makes Marcel Marceau seem positively gobby. That's very good.
Yeah. What can I say? Not much.
Do you think that's an unfair assessment of your character?
I should try and talk a lot now. Not really, but a lot of... I love music. I think it's really, really important. And a lot of the press and the kind of media of music is kind of really throwaway. Like jokes, like what's your favourite fruit? Unless that's one of your questions, but I just did that in the last interview. And it's this kind of, like, just junk. And I kind of refuse to talk about it, so it's hard to sort of try and compare yourself to somebody so famous, isn't it?
And silent. You could mime the rest of the interview, it would be great. Because I suspected at that time, I thought, well, perhaps that Spaceman 3 had finished and you'd moved on to Spiritualize, that suddenly the onus was on you. And that perhaps that made you feel uncomfortable.
It's
that
not
you
just had. That. I've got to front it. It's my work or whatever, but I've got no desire to be like that, you know. It's not really about me. It's about the music. It's about the music I make. And also what's really odd as well is as the music gets older, the stories, everything we talk about now, it becomes even less. You know, they're just footnotes. They're just tiny stories for people who are interested in the stories behind music. But most people who listen to music... then we're not historians. You listen to music in the way it affects you. No, I done wrong, but I could have done me worse. Well, here it comes. Here comes the sound.
What you're talking about a lot there is interpretation. How people interpret you. And one of the things that people have been saying about your new album is probably connected to the fact they don't realise that it was all recorded before your illness, and so that they're interpreting it by events that happened after it was written. Is that right?
Yeah, a little. Yeah, I guess I don't know. I think, am I still on the Marceau Marceau question? I can't stop people interpreting things how they want to interpret them, and I haven't got any lines that I can say, no, you should listen to it like this or you should hear it like this, because everybody's experience to music is unique.
Did you enjoy making this album?
Good question. At times.
And when you found it not enjoyable, was it because outside influence was trying to make it radio-friendly, or just because
there's no influence like that. It's just not an easy... I found it quite harrowing that the songs did relate. I originally wrote the album as with characters, almost, that I wasn't writing specifically about me, so it broadened what I could write about. And then it was quite harrowing that they seemed like there was some kind of... that they'd sort of prophesied my illness and whatever, which I had to get over. And also, they sounded... when I came back to work on them, they didn't sound contemporary. I don't mean contemporary music in a musical world, just contemporary to my life. It was like I was working on something that was an old collection. And at times it seemed marginally less difficult to work on them and try and find a way to finish them than to throw them away. And then when I was really low, I met Harmony Korine. And he asked me to do some film music for his new film. And he put me in a studio where I was working with just sound, just music, and I didn't have to front it. I didn't have to think about what I was trying to do. I didn't have to explain, this is my new project, this is what I'm trying to achieve. And it was hugely liberating. And while I was doing that, I thought, because this was going so well, I ran my album at the same time, and they bled into each other, so the film got inside of the album and bits of my album got inside the film. And it gave my album a kind of atmosphere. It sort of found this environment that made my record become contemporary again, or contemporary to me.
Before I listened to it, I think I expected it to be maybe a little bit more morbid. But from the...
Is that what you wanted?
That's what I want. That's the only thing I like in music. Because of your illness, and because, is it going to be very clinical? Is it going to be very soul-searching? It actually feels just like an incredibly positive album from someone with a lot of life force in them.
Yeah, but it wasn't... it was written before, and... you know, you say, was it easy to make it? They're not easy to make, because I have to try... I can almost say that I know that that album's right, because I ran controls while I was making it, so every mix I did, I did a mix that sounded like Phil Spector or these huge... so I know... but I know that it doesn't work like that. And I've got this thing where if the song's out of time, I don't mind spending a week and a half putting it in time to know that it doesn't actually work like that. But even some of the things like Death Take Your Fiddle was written... it sounds kind of dumb, because I think about the first line, it doesn't sound like the most positive of lines, but it was written... pride isn't the right word, but it was written more from that perspective, that it came with this kind of, life really isn't worth living unless you're close to death. It puts this massive, important thing to life. I got a hurricane inside my veins, and I want to stay forever. They're not meant to be, what was your word, morbid, because life's great, you know.
Okay, there's two things that I wanted to ask you, so you can decide which one you want to answer. One is, I've always wanted to know if you had a religious upbringing. And the other one is, I wanted to know whether having children changed the way you felt about life.
Can I do the first?
Yes.
No.
Not even a little.
No, not really. Only through kind of school and stuff like that.
Because I think a lot of the spiritualized stuff, it just feels that there's a lot of religious imagery there. It's spectral.
I love gospel music. I love this kind of idea of truth in music. So much popular music is people copying other people's style or take or dress or whatever and passing it off as their own. And I love this idea that there's a kind of music that's made by people who are saying this is where I stand and this is how important this is to me. And gospel music, by its very nature, is infused with that, you know, because it's people who believe and they're singing about that belief. And it's really hard to stand in front of a gospel choir and not feel that. So I just love that sound, you know.
That was Jason Pearce of Spiritualize, and Songs in A&E is out next week.
Thank you, Rosie. That was an excellent interview and very enlightening as to vis-a-vis the spiritual element or otherwise in people's music. Has that changed your view on God at all?
No, not at all.
Good. Moving on to the section of the show cavemen like to call UGG, though they tend to use that word for everything. Yes, it's Singles Club, and boy, am I glad to welcome into the pod the misanthropic star of Football Weekly podcast. It's Mr. Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Hello, Barry.
Thank you for having me today.
Not at all.
It's like one of those cartoon crossovers where Homer Simpson ends up on Family Guy or something.
Well, exactly, but rendered in the style of the Family Guy illustrators and therefore not looking quite like himself.
Exactly.
But we just should explain to listeners who haven't been following this, I made a brief and not particularly pleasant appearance on Football Weekly the other week, and people decided that it would only be fair if we had the main man from Football Weekly back on to review the singles. And lo and behold, here we are gratifying our readers' desires.
James Richardson isn't available because he's at Champions League final, so I'm here instead.
He's at the Champions League final doing one of these highly paid sideline jobs you're always referencing.
I'm wearing a rock and roll t-shirt, a Primal Scream t-shirt, in a bid to look edgy and cool.
But you've got a jumper over it.
Yeah, that tells you all you need to know, really, doesn't it?
It seems that we should no longer hang around on ceremony and we should get right into the music. We start with Black Mountain, and this is Stormy High. That is Stormy High by Black Mountain. Five men from Vancouver in Canada, Black Mountain are rockers by night, drug counsellors by day. They work at a local needle exchange, don't you know? Though they probably find cover when they're touring. Lead singer Stephen McBain has an experimental side project. It's called Pink Mountain Tops. You may be detecting a theme. And their latest album, available now, is called In the Future. Which is kind of ironic, is it not, Rosie Swash?
Well, because they're so 70s.
They're just so obviously retro.
Yes, they are. But although their music does quite often have this feeling of the occult in it, you know, sorcery and witches and all that stuff. I absolutely love this song. And In the Future is an incredible album. But it is very retro. They just do it in a brilliant way. There's a lot going on there. People have called them psych rock and stoner rock and all that. But they've got these fantastic sort of Black Sabbath power chords going through everything. It always sounds very, very powerful.
Barry. Why would one listen to a track by Black Mountain when you could put on a Deep Purple record instead?
That's a very good question. I don't know. I didn't really like this. I thought it was sort of dull but worthy meat and potatoes rock. And it reminded me a lot of Shoot the Runner by Kasabian, but played at a different speed, which is Shoot the Runner by Kasabian played at the correct speed is not really a song I would enjoy too much. So, or possibly Shoot the Runner as sung by or interpreted by Nick Cave. So, yeah, I didn't really like this. And I must confess, I don't know much about Black Mountain beyond having heard this single and a couple of other tracks I listened to.
But I imagine you're the sort of guy who might like to kind of chug out to a riff at home, but this didn't connect with you.
It didn't really float my boat at all, no. I do like loud guitars, but I prefer a bit of sort of bleepy bits thrown in on top.
Yeah. But, well, this is when they're being so resistantly retro. There is no bleep. There is nothing that appears to have been plugged into a computer at any point.
I would defend their right not to insert bleeps to the hilt, but, you know, I just wouldn't
would
go
you
to
die
see them.
For that right? Would you go out there on the barricades?
Probably not, no. Let's not over-egg the pudding.
Rosie, can I just ask why this, because I don't want to hark back too often to the ATP incident, you know, the whole abandonment thing.
Yeah, you've clearly let that go.
But there was a lot of psych rock that weekend, and it does appear that psych rock is in fashion. We've had a few blogs on it on our very own website talking about it. Why now?
That's an interesting question. I would say, firstly, why Black Mountain? Possibly because Amber Webber is in the band and she's fantastic. It seems like a shallow observation, but it does help to have that kind of Grateful Dead Birds meets, you know, Black Sabbath or something. That is not something that you would associate with women, really. Mm-hmm. And so to have a woman in the band makes them stand out already. I guess, you know, if everything's got to have its turn to have a resurgence, a lot of the, all this stuff is coming out of America and it's influenced by American bands.
Fair dues. We'll let that act as a summary on this particular track, which was Black Mountain and Stormy High. Next up on Singles Club, we have While My Heart Gently Weeps by the Wu-Tang Clan.
Your smile has got me shrinking, the tears in your eyes are twinkling, because the heart gently weeps.
Snowy night, King's Basin, a raisin in the sun was amazing. The joint on the dresser, a gauge went on, jumped up, fish tank, it fell, when they stuck, they shot a cousin, LaVon, Neo the Buck, Willie was awful, pulled.
That is The Wu, and While My Heart Gently Weeps. Now, the Wu-Tang Clan are a 322-piece rap outfit from New York's Staten Island, and they bestrode the world in the late 1990s. Now, not so much. Though Method Man was in The Wire and Ghostface Killah is still the underground rapper's underground rapper, which means he sells even fewer copies than the underground rapper. This track, according to the group, is an interpolation of the Beatles classic While My Guitar Gently Weeps and features George Harrison's son Danny on said guitar. Now, Barry.
Yes.
Do you suspect that they used the word interpolation wisely?
I don't know, because I have no idea what an interpolation is, as you well know, because I asked you before we came into the studio.
Well, I don't think any of us really knew, because we were debating this yesterday, and I looked it up in the dictionary, of course, interpolation, and it means to stick something in the middle of. Now, I can't see that they're sticking something in the middle of anything here. They just are ripping off the track. I think ripping off a cover version of it.
I think sampling is the technical term for ripping off.
Yeah, it's a legitimate musical practice, apparently. But does it? Let's put that issue to one side. The whole interpolation. Sorry, digression. What do you reckon of the track? Is it a happy marriage?
I think it's brilliant. I really like it. I'm not going to pretend I'm a huge fan of rap or hip hop. Unlike yourself, I wasn't dragged up in the projects in Norwich, the low rise. But yeah, I love this. It's from the album Eight Diagrams, and in the course of my extensive research, you probably already know this, Feng Shui has at its core the concept of eight diagrams, and each one representing a different aspect of life. And I believe the Wu-Tang Clan have always, you know, sort of, they are the antidote to the more bland, wishy-washy hip-hop that's been put out at the moment.
And what kind of energy do you think it's channeling in this particular track?
Well, they're injecting some much-needed positive energy. Can you tell I'm really bluffing here?
My 5 minute chat about feng shui. No, I didn't get that at all. But I mean, it's a very gentle rap record. It's not only in its pace, but in the tone of voice of the rappers as well, which is quite unusual. No,
Ghostface Killah's rap on this as well, especially as it's all quite violent. It's violent stuff, which is no bad thing, but it doesn't really go with the tempo and the sort of laid back feel to it. And Erykah Badu being sort of Earth Mother in the background. I don't like this, and I do like the Wu-Tang Clan a lot, and I think that what they've done for samples in hip-hop is brilliant. I mean, they had torture fests all over, was it 36 Chambers, and they're inspirational in what they do. But I don't really understand why they've done this, because what they've done with it just isn't that interesting, and I just think it's a wasted opportunity.
You can kind of see this ending up in the soundtrack of some film starring, you know, Gene Hackman as the coach of a underachieving female basketball team, you know, in the middle of Harlem or something. And that would not be a good thing.
I think there's something about this track. It just sounds old. Sound a little bit tired. And this thing has been kicking around for ages. There was a Ghostface reinterpretation of While My Guitar Gently Weeps, and it was doing the rounds about 5-6 years ago.
Which is weird, because RZA always goes on like it was his idea.
Well, maybe it was, but I heard it on this DJ Absolute mixtape, and it was fantastic. It was raw, it was funky, and it was raw. And so it's obviously been hanging around for ages, and you wonder, what's the point of doing it now? But they've really toned down at the edges, so all the way around. And I kind of think that says a little something about the Wu-Tang Clan this time around, myself. While My Heart Gently Weeps by Wu-Tang Clan is out now, final track on Singles Club is I'm Good, I'm Gone by Likey Lai. That's Leaky Lee with I'm Good, I'm Gone. Born Lee Leaky, Timotei Zakriso, for some reason this Stockholm-born singer adopted a shorter stage name. The 21-year-old's debut album, Youth Novels, was produced by Björn Littling from Peter, Björn and John and is therefore expected to feature a degree of whistling. The video to this track features a guest appearance from Swedish pop sensation Robin, the woman whom Leaky Lee is most often compared to, probably because they're both blonde. Rosie.
And they're both Swedish.
Oh, yeah, that
and
too.
And they're both kooky. This track I don't like so much. I think that she is a very interesting pop star. I think her album, Youth Novels, which is her debut album, what I like about it is, and it's similar to Robin in these kind of, I guess you could call them authentic pop stars, in that it's her idea, it's all about her. She hasn't got a million different writers on every track and a million different producers or anything like that. But I think this is boring. And I think she did her song A Little Bit, which I think is probably one of the best songs I've heard in the last year. It's just like a little sherbet suite of a pop song. It's just perfect. This, I think, is, I mean, the sort of plunky piano. I just think anyone could have made this.
Now, Barry, I'm getting quite interested in the idea of you and Rosie being polar opposites of the critical spectrum. What do you think of this song?
I love it.
Yes!
It's a grower, a slow burner. I don't know how many times Rosie's listened to it. I've listened to it about five or six times. First time I thought it was just really odd. I watched it on YouTube. I don't know if it's the official video clip, but there was a guy there playing a snare drum, prowling around in front of her as she sang it. He was just mesmerised. But I didn't really like it the first time I heard it, and now I love it. And I think if Peter Enkelman was this catchy, Cardiff City wouldn't have lost the FA Cup final on Saturday. I can't get it out of my head. But it's good because I listened to it after the Black Mountain song, so it sort of got rid of that out of my ear. And I listened to A Little Bit as well. I'd never heard of Leaky Lee before yesterday, and that's fantastic too. So I agree with Rosie on that count.
I have to agree with Barry on this one. I love this track too. And I think there's a degree, I find the melody sticks in your head. Like the second time you're listening, it starts looping around, it's a little earworm. But when you're talking about authenticity, I just think the drums on this are fantastic. They're just like really garage, rocky, dull, thudding drums that just take you along and remind you of bands of yore. And I think that really works.
I agree. The other part of this song, which I do like right at the beginning, is that Legally is not ever afraid to sort of ugly it up. And the beginning, the way she does it live is she does it through a loudspeaker, but she distorts her vocals. They're really, really deep and they sound very manly. You might not even know it was her. And there's not many people not many female pop stars that would do something like that because it's not particularly attractive. Mm. I like those aspects of her. I just think she hasn't quite reached the point where she's making brilliant pop songs. I think her album is a little bit disappointing. And this is one of the tracks that maybe some people might like, and I just find I'd never listen to this.
That's interesting. And the fact there's already been some people posting on the blog about their opinions on the Leaky Lee, and some of them are sharing your opinion there. Okay, well, that's great. That's really well done, people. I think we've really covered the full gamut of opinion on pop. Listen to this, because I'm going to take a quick squiz at comments from last week's blog now. We reviewed Ida Maria's Queen of the World, also another Scandinavian female singer, and we all generally held it to be absolute rubbish. SV80, however, has spoken up in her defence. I feel a touch sorry for her. It's not really her fault that so many journalists have gone completely overboard with their praise. It looks like quite a few people whose pop radars have been corroded by decades of neglect have tried to jump on the bandwagon. Pop radars, bandwagons. And now that the genre is picking up some credibility, Ida seems like quite a dynamic performer. She just needed time to develop naturally and write a few good songs. Although, as Hot Chip have demonstrated, one song is enough to sustain a career. To which remark, one can only say meow. EJD, however, is a fan of Hot Chip, whose One Pure Thought we also reviewed. I absolutely love One Pure Thought, an early contender for my song of the year, he or she writes. I'll also happily listen to the rest of the album, even some of the slow ones. All right, remember, you can join the debate by posting your reviews on the tracks discussed this week at blogs.guardian.co.uk/music. Tell us what you think of Black Mountain, The Woo and Leaky Lee and these other tracks that are out to buy now. Ashley Simpson, Out of My Head.
Johnny Fallon, Eyes Wide Terrified.
Young Knives, Turn Tail. That is our now tried, trusted and patented montage. Okay, Barry Glendening.
Yes.
I'd like to say a thing to you. I'd like to say thank you so much for coming into the pod today.
Thanks for having me.
I hope this can be the beginning of a cultural exchange and maybe we'll both pop up on the Environment podcast one week talking about galoshes.
I'd draw the line at appearing on the Environment podcast or Islamophonic or any of those other ones that I really have no interest in whatsoever.
That would be great, wouldn't it? Imagine if we started... Yeah. Anyway,
I was really refreshed to hear that your bloggers sort of log on and give input and it's more than just calling you a tosser like we get on the football.
No, we get that too. There was one guy who once... Anyway, we could go into my long dark nightmares about how people just posting and saying, listen, Paul, you're not as good as Rosie, you should give up now.
So does that mean that I get to go on Football Weekly?
You can go on Football Weekly the minute you know a thing about football.
She
laughed at my Peter Enkelman joke.
That is true. That is true. And we've still got the great photo of you with David Seaman. So.
A swash with Seaman.
Don't! There's a joke already did the rounds on the sports desk.
All right, thanks very much, Baz. And that is also it for this week's Singles Club. But don't forget to catch Rosie's texticular version. We're sure David Seaman does. Which goes live on Guardian/Music every Tuesday. Next on Music Weekly, though, we speak to Johnny Flynn.
My mum listens to this.
Yeah, well, she won't anymore.
Don't know where I can buy myself a brand new pair of ears. Don't know where I can buy a heart. The one I've got is shoddy. I need a brand new body. Well, then I can have a brand new start.
Pray for the people inside your head, for they won't be there when you're dead. Muffle loud and push back down, push back through the leafy ground.
That is Tickle Me Pink by Johnny Flynn. He's a 24-year-old who's sometimes called the male Laura Marling and also sometimes called that square-jawed, blue-eyed bloke who used to be a Shakespearean actor but all of a sudden is writing folk music. Now, never the ones for cynicism, we're quite beguiled by Flynn and his affable, nostalgic view of the world. And so when we met, I asked him whether this charming persona was reflected in the real-life Johnny Flynn.
Well, I am wearing, a red nose and a clown jester's hat.
I noticed the big curly wig underneath.
That's for those people that can't see. There's a certain type of humour that's really helpful for people to kind of get drawn into a story. I feel it's in sort of flow with, like, the way people live and interact, and it's quite... I was quite often a bit of a clown with my friends at school or whatever, and that's kind of stayed... with me. I'm definitely not the biggest clown in the band, though. There's an actual clown in the band.
An actual professional clown?
Matt Edmonds, the drummer, he's a comedian, so it's quite hard to get in there in the bus, you know, with the jokes. He's sort of, like, fast-cracking, you know.
You say there's a type of humour you think that helps people to engage in stories. What type of humour do you think that is?
I like what people call, like, and it's an inherently British sense of humour that I guess it's pretty much a post-war kind of irreverence back to, like, the Goons. I think it's humour that doesn't really put anyone else down. It's almost like a zen kind of humour, because there's this horrible, like, loutish 90s smash-and-grab humour that was all about slagging everyone off.
Yeah.
Leftovers is what I want. Don't need no fine cuisine.
I'm just wondering if you could tell us a little bit about your youth. Were you an urbanite or a country boy?
Mostly country. My parents moved from South Africa, where I was born, to London when I was 2.5. And we lived in London for like a year or two, and then moved to a naff suburb we lived in somewhere in Hampshire till I was 5. And then we moved to this beautiful village in Hampshire. It was very home counties kind of, but actually quite old school. And I went to the local school, and a lot of my friends came from this quite rough estate. So I had slightly kind of rough friends whose brothers were all like in and out of trouble. And we were, for fun, we'd be like smoking out ferrets in like woods and stuff. Lots of poaching and stuff like that. It was country, but it wasn't too la-di-da.
You do get an impression from your lyrics of a keen experience of a way of life that's quintessentially English, but maybe not the the modern English experience that you might regularly see packaged. Was that well preserved in the part of Hampshire you lived in as a kid, the orchards and the bicycles and the...
Yeah, I guess, although I was very young when I came from South Africa, for a start, that's like as a sort of colonial sort of outpost of Britain, South Africa, like white South Africa is quite like that.
Have you ever been to the Isle of Man?
No.
I would recommend going to the Isle of Man if you want to know what England was like in the 1950s. Actually, I was never there, but yeah. The Isle of Man is amazing. It's like in Aspic. Almost.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, and now it's called the Isle of Sam.
No. What's that?
In honour of the girl that's from the Isle of Man that's auditioning for the role of Nancy.
Oh, my God.
And that is not awful. But I think it's wonderfully... It wouldn't happen anywhere else. Like, they'd just be like, you know, screw her.
Yeah.
Yate from the bins in the park, stayed out with the rats after dark. Never left a trail, never made his mark when he ate with the rats after dark. Sweep my mess away, leave my body, leave my bones, leave me whole and leave my soul.
Is it true you then went on to Winchester Private School?
Yeah,
later on?
Yeah.
How did that work with your friends from the estate?
Well, to be honest, I slowly lost touch with them just because, you know, when you're in different schools. But like, I was 8 years old when I got this music scholarship to go to basically the sort of feeder school for Winchester College. And that's kind of another part of like finding that old England was because your life in the school was like pretty much lived within the cathedral cloisters, and it was really old fashioned, like ridiculously so. Like we walked in a crocodile from chapel to Latin classes, and you know.
Did you wear any of those kind of knickerbocker style trousers?
No, but we did have nice little caps, and if you were under the age of 10 or 11, you had to wear shorts all year round with long socks and garters.
One final question. If there were one thing you would like to have achieved this time next year, what would it be?
Maybe to have finished all the other albums and the like obligation that I have to to the label, and then I could just run free. Yeah. I think the biggest thing for me is just to allow change, but to see my friends as much as possible, basically. See my girlfriend, you know. And to not let it get in the way of being, you know, a human being.
That's Johnny Flynn, and his debut album, Alarum, is out now. Right, we had loads of friend requests on Facebook in the last week, and here are some of them. Christopher Connew, Nicola Majurier, Toby Donnelly, Jennifer Pajon, John Houlihan, Maura Leary, John Guy, Martin Weber, Joe Balcom, and Johnny Mook, Simon Bomstead, and Mavis Ang. Finally, this week, I would like to draw everyone's attention to a brief debate over the merits of artistic embellishments during the performance of popular music, viz. Mikachu sticking a Hoover all over her face when she plays live. The Bionic Dan writes, I quite like Golden Phone and Lone Ranger, but does Mikachu's live performances remind anyone else of Howard Moon from the Mighty Boosh? Without being funny, that is. Hoxton pretentiousness at its worst. Might be being a little harsh here, but get the Hoover off the goddamn stage! Jay Hawk retorts, I can't help thinking a bit much has been made about the Mikachu Hoover thing. It was, I thought, quite a useful tool for modulating her voice in just one song. It's not like she's doing a one-woman plus Hoover instrumental show. If she did, though, she'd no doubt get excellent coverage in Wire magazine. I'm not a huge fan of the Leaky Lee album, actually. It left me a bit cold, though the first track's fantastic. I think Hannah Huckelberg's probably a better example of a genuinely interesting and innovative Scandinavian artist. So there we go, Rosie, somebody backing you up on the blog. OK, on next week's programme, we'll be bringing you Mika P. Hinson.
I'm not afraid of the suffering or the pain.
That's some live acoustic music right there from Mika P. Hinson, and you can hear the whole track and our full interview on next week's show. We're back on Friday. Please register. Register. Get the podcast sent straight to your computer or MP3 player for free. Cut out the middleman. Stop the worry. Make your weekend a far more pleasant experience. You can find out how to do all of that at guardian.co.uk/music. That is all for this week, however. Thank you, Rosie Swash.
Oh, you're welcome.
And I want to point out that I actually made up all those credentials for Rosie at the beginning of the show. She doesn't have an
MFI. I do
MFI.
Like KFC, though.
Do you? Yum, 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 yum. We'll be back next week. Bye till then.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.